Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show here on FM Talk 106.5. Hope everyone's doing well on this Monday. Join us on the line, kind of looking back at CPAC and what happened over the weekend. United States Representative Kat Kamek on the line with us, Representative, or Congresswoman. How are you this morning?
I am doing great, Jeff. Thank you so much. What a weekend.
Yeah, I tell you. Well, truth be told, we're taping this thing, and because the show doesn't run on Saturday and Sunday, but as it goes, I was talking to you a little bit before we came on. Typically, these CPAC events are in the last few have been in Maryland. Before that, it was in the northwest part of D.C. Near Woodley Park. After this experience of what I've been through since I guess kicked off yesterday or Thursday. I can't see CPAC ever going back, and I know that given that this is your, you know, your home state, your district not too far from here, I guess it's opened a lot of eyes to what Florida has to offer.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a reason why Florida sees so many large conferences from associations and groups from all over the country, and you can't beat the weather, especially this time of year, and, you know, we have a very open door policy as far as our state goes and our response to COVID. I think Governor Ron DeSantis has done a great job in taking common sense, measured approach to the COVID pandemic. And as we've seen, you know, people are doing what they can, following protocols where they can, and everyone's having a great time. So I think it's safe to say that in the future, a lot of these big conferences will be looking to Florida to find a new home for these big events. And you know, the great thing is we can accommodate it. And it's a great space for these groups and these types of events to grow.
Well, something I would add to that, I think in this age of COVID-19, it's, you know, the approaches taken in handling the pandemic and the way Governor DeSantis has handled it, not really, you know, shutting down or imposing restrictions when necessary, but not, you know, just being so draconian the way some of these blue states have been. I think it also sends a signal to a lot of people that this is the sunshine state, if you will, is a good place to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're just so thrilled that we've had the opportunity to showcase our beautiful state to so many patriots from around the country. And I hope to see many more of these types of conferences. You know, Turning Point USA, they just did over the winter break a great conference for students that came from all over the country. Now we're hosting CPAC. Next weekend, there's a very large national security symposium happening. I think people will start looking at Florida as the destination for these types of meetings. So the politics is right, the weather is right, and it's a great place to really be the seat for conservative values and the efforts as we start looking to take back the House and eventually the White House in 4 years.
Well, let's talk a little bit about going forward. You know, even though what happened at the top of the ticket on November 3rd with the presidential race didn't exactly go, I think, a lot of people had hoped. But on the other side, you guys in the House have really narrowed that gap. And, I mean, Pelosi's just got a, you know, 5-6 seat, whatever they ends up being when all said and done. A majority in the House of Representatives didn't lose any seats. You're trending in a good direction, didn't get all the way there quite yet, but 2022, getting there, overcoming and getting over the hill, you know, kind of where do you see that going? What do you see some of the themes headed into that midterm? And, you know, the Republican Party looking forward, typically after these election losses at the top of the ticket, there's some soul searching.
You know, there certainly is. There's no doubt that, you know, we had election irregularities that happened in states like Arizona or Pennsylvania that unfortunately have really not been resolved. And I think that there are state officials in those particular areas that have said, you know, it doesn't matter that we broke the law and that we violated the Constitution, specifically in that case, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. That's something that needs to be addressed first and foremost is the election integrity issue. Because I know a lot of people, as I talk to them, they want to take the House back. They want to really move forward. But there's a lot of doubt in people's minds about the credibility. The good news, and this is what I like to share with folks, is there are 30 states across the United States that Republicans can control both the House and the Senate. And that means that they are going to have an incredible oversight over the redistricting processes, over election integrity initiatives, because the thing that you don't want to do, and I know people are frustrated still, the thing you don't want to happen is you don't want the federal government to come in and federalize and nationalize these elections, right? Because as we've seen with what the Democrats are trying to do, they will overstep their bounds any opportunity that they get. So it's so important that we really empower these states to bolster their election security and integrity. And on top of those 30 states, we have 17 states where conservatives control one chamber. So there's still a foot in the door there to really make these necessary reforms. Simple things like requiring a sworn affidavit, certifying the number of ballots that they have in hand at the close of the polls on election day. That way, we're not seeing these arbitrary numbers where ballots are magically being found in drawers and suitcases after the fact. We actually know, hey, we have X number of ballots, certify it on that day at that closing of the polls, and this is what they're going to move forward with. So things like that that we're really paying attention to address so that people feel confident going into the polls on election day. But talking about the future of the GOP, you know, I came into the 117th Congress as the youngest Republican woman in the country. And I never campaigned on being the young one. I never campaigned on being a woman. I campaigned on being the best person for the job because conservatives value diversity of opinion, diversity of thought, and we really focus on the individual and empowering the individual. When we look at districts across the country where you don't typically see a conservative representing that area, we need to look at the opportunities that exist there, because if we can sell this message to millennials, and I'm proud to be a millennial representing, millennials in Congress and Gen Zs in Congress. But if we look at those folks and say, you want the opportunity to really succeed beyond your wildest dreams, we want you to have equal opportunity, not equal outcome. And it's all dependent on how hard you work. 9 times out of 10, people are going to say, yeah, I want that. And they're going to support those policies. And it just so happens that those policies that support that idea are Republican policies. So it's just about how we change the messaging. We're not changing the values. We're not changing the platform. We're changing the way that we communicate these issues to voters. And we're going to recruit new people into the party that have maybe found themselves disenfranchised with both parties or disillusioned with the political process as a whole. So we're going to get those people involved and engaged. And that is how we are going to go around and take the fight to the people in these districts.
Congresswoman, you mentioned something. You didn't really play up the identity politics, even though you identify as a millennial. Whenever I talk to, you know, some of these people all throughout the conservative movement, they really think that's important to play that up, to try to give a younger voter or maybe even other identity groups or whatever you want to categorize them, demographic groups, somebody they can relate to. And they think that's such an important component. But on the other side, I think you make a very valid point that that's not what Republicans have done traditionally. We try to oversee that, overlook that stuff.
Yeah.
What talk a little bit about that and what led you to, you know, take that approach.
Well, you know, we're conservative. We don't do identity politics. That is a tactic of the left. This whole mentality that you need to check a box in order to make sure that something gets done or can be done is ridiculous. It is so infuriating to me when people come and talk to me and say, oh, you know, as a woman, you're going to fight for this, you're going to fight for that. I said, no, as a representative, I'm going to fight for the 710,000 constituents that I have in my district that sent me to Washington. I don't care if they are black or white, young or old, Republican, Democrat. A representative is an advocate and a voice in Washington, D.C. And I think when we start getting into the game of what the Democrats do, of this checking the box, that we have to have a woman, that we have to have a person of color, that we have to check all these little boxes, we're doing a disservice, not just to ourselves, but to the country and our communities, because we should strive above all else for the best person for the job. And when you talk about millennials and people are saying, oh, we got to get young people involved, you got to get the right people involved. And talking to millennials, we are a very strange generation. We grew up with both, I like to say, analog and digital, but we also have a very healthy amount of skepticism that is just ingrained in our DNA. When you talk to a millennial, they just want to know why. Millennials typically reject this notion that we do things the way that they've always been done just because. And so that's why I'm so passionate about focusing on the messaging and the storytelling behind why we are pro-life, why we are for free trade, why we are for empowering the individual. When you tell it in a story and you share your why, millennials get it. And they want that autonomy. They want that individual right to make those decisions for themselves. They don't want big bureaucratic government. This notion that young people are attracted to socialism and the Democrats is because they have sent a messenger who has really communicated that. And so if we fall into this trap of what the Democrats do, of the check the box mentality, the identity politics, we're no better than them. We have to be better than that. And we have got to step up and take back the narrative that we are the ones that are really empowering individuals, that are really for small business, that we are there for everyone, and that we support equal opportunity, not equal outcome.
Joined by Congresswoman Kat Kamik of Florida. Always good to talk to her. Just a few more minutes left with you. We were talking a little bit about where the Republican Party goes from now and kind of the direction it goes. Typically in these election cycles, like the one coming up in 2022, the party in power in the White House, they suffer losses, and the party in the opposition, the loyal opposition, does really well. We talk about that. You could really make a lot of political hay opposing Joe Biden, and then on the other hand, I guess let's talk about what you're really working toward. But I guess in some ways, particularly foreign policy, let's say, I feel like you're going to have to do both in this upcoming election cycle.
Yeah, you know, I think when you talk about what's going on, you know, just today, we see Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi trying to ram a $1.9 trillion spending package down the American people's throats, despite the fact that we have, you know, $1 trillion still remaining unspent. We saw the efforts of the left to really push the Equality Act and force people to perform abortion services, no matter if it went against their religious beliefs or not. We're seeing the attack on law enforcement from the left. We're seeing the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and Biden, pushing H.R. 1, which is their major election reform bill, which will publicly finance campaigns and use taxpayer dollars to do it, as well as lowering the voting age to 16 and a number of other completely ludicrous ideas. They are on a track to fundamentally alter what America is all about. And so it's our job to fight back and really highlight how asinine and un-American these initiatives and these policies are. So we have two fronts that we have to fight. We've got to fight back on what this crazy, dangerous narrative and these policies are that the Democrats are pushing, while simultaneously promoting the same positive vision that Republicans have been pushing for and really putting the work in and empowering people back home and in their communities to become these power brokers that can really start helping get candidates elected that share our conservative values, all the way from the school board all the way up to Congress. So we have two fronts. We've got to fight for the next 2 years, and we're going to do it simultaneously. And I'm excited. Like I said, you know, being the youngest Republican woman, I feel like I have an extra duty stamped on my back that we've got to charge forward and make sure that we're getting all the best candidates recruited and ready to go. And we'll take the House back. We only need 5 seats right now. And of course, those numbers will change with redistricting, but we're going to get it done.
And last question, Congresswoman, before I let you go. You mentioned kind of being the loyal opposition and doing the best you can, at least to highlight what you can do or what's going on, all the asinine stuff going on with Democrats and now controlling, you know, obviously both chambers of Congress now. But what, in the meantime, in the interim, you know, a 5-vote majority, not that much. Do you feel like you got a good shot at maybe pulling away a Democrat or two or doing something that could slow some of this down on the House floor?
Yeah, you know, and I say that not because I'm the eternal optimist, but I say that because I do think that the Democrats are pushing a very, very liberal agenda, you know, socialist, a very, very radical, dangerous agenda. And there's a lot of Democrats that still have a base back home in their districts that support police, that want to see school choice, that believe that they are better suited to make decisions for themselves and their families than the government. And so they have to be exceptionally careful that they're not going down this path with Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden to turn everything over to the government and turn us into a socialist state. There's issues like rural broadband, for example, one of my top issues. I've already talked with several of my Democratic colleagues from across the country that share this top issue, and they know they've got to work with Republicans if they're going to get things done. There's issues like human trafficking that we have been working on that is a bipartisan initiative. Getting vaccines deployed into the field, that's another issue that we can be bipartisan. There's individual issues that we can really tackle. And like I said, with the number of 5 that they have on us right now, they cannot steamroll the Republicans. You're going to need much, much more manpower in the majority if you are going to really try to shove through this radical agenda. And we saw just recently how some of the Democrats have defected and gone and voted alongside with Republicans. And it's because they have districts back home that they need to serve and take care of first. Otherwise, they won't be coming back to Washington.
Congresswoman, we got to leave it there, but thank you for making time for us, and we do appreciate it. Maybe we could talk again real soon.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Thank you so much, Jeff. Have a great week.
You do the same. Congresswoman Kat Kamick here on the program. We got to take a quick timeout. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
He knows she gets lonely, so he lets her know he's thinking about her. And though millions are listening, she knows who he's talking to. Coming to your life like I do every night from the heart.